Vivian lives in the forest. Her body is falling apart. She has one eye, one lung, one kidney. And she's part of a group of fugitives rebelling against their world of robots, metadata, control. She has left her life as a psychologist in the city to live in the forest with human clones. And she's on the run from drones hunting her and the others. Our Life in the Forest is a slender book, a darkly comic dystopian novel by the award-winning French author Marie Dariussecq, whose first novel, Pigtails, was published in 1996. Welcome, Marie.
Hello, Sarah.
Marie, does this description of the novel as a dystopian novel sit well with you?
It does, yes. The word dystopia seems to be on the air, seems to be fashionable in a way. I like also the idea of imminence, of imminent literature, something that's really about to happen, like in 10 years, perhaps. It's not exactly science fiction. It's really about to happen, imminent. I think fiction has this power to warn us, but fiction has also this wonderful power of irony, humor, dark humor that I like to use a lot. And I hope the book is also funny in a way.
Yes, it's darkly funny, I'd say, because the main character you've drawn, because of the way the main character actually is writing this account of her life in the forest in a very hurried way. How did you come to this idea of this woman writing in the forest?
I like novels that are set in strange places, I think. The novel is, in a way, very close to my very first novel. The title was Pigtails. I wrote it in 96, 22 years ago. And it was already a story of survival in the voice of a candid, naive narrator who was a pig at that time in that novel. And I like those narrators who are not exactly aware of what is happening and who try to explain it, who try to say it, to tell it, to make their awkward life, their destroyed life sometimes, into a story. Because the reader, I can play this way with the reader in a sort of complicity of connivance with the reader that creates irony and humor. The reader knows more than the narrator. And I like the space that's liberated in this way of telling stories.
Because what the reader is getting is just this actually quite narrow account of this one woman's life. We don't see the broader society. It's not like 1984 where you get a view of what's going on with Big Brother, for instance. You've kept the view deliberately constrained and narrow.
Yes, because what makes me free is that I write after all these great writers, Orwell, Huxley, but also Jules Verne and this great Soviet writer who wrote, the name is Zamyatin, who wrote a sort of very first dystopian novel called Us, Nous, set also in a forest with fugitives. And all these people knew a lot, in a way a lot more than us, about the dictatorship system, about the surveillance system, the control system, of what politics can do to human beings and to human bodies. And I write after all these great writers. And also I write after Blade Runner and all these movies we saw, our popular culture of science fiction. So I do not need to explain too much. Readers know what I'm talking about. So I can set a very narrow view because you all know what I'm talking about. And I can play. And I can play with drones and clones and robots because we know them. I can play with animals also. And the narrator doesn't know much, but you know what she's talking about. And that's my point of interest there.
And so, well, let's go into the world of this book. We're introduced to the main character. She tells us her name is Vivian, but in fact, she tells us that her name is Marie. And then she tells us that she's named her clone Marie. And her clone is called or known as a half. Can you just explain this idea?
Mm-hmm. I wrote 22 years ago, also I wrote a short story, only 3 pages. It was just an idea of a young woman who was at the bed of another young woman who looked exactly like her and was asleep, like a sleeping beauty. But you could understand at the end of the short story that it was a clone just put into an induced coma and kept there, of course, like clones are supposed to be used to keep fresh organs. So they don't need to be waken up. They need to sleep and to be kept intact. But I wondered, what is the relation between her and a clone? Does she love her? Does she hate her? Does she really accept the idea of the organs? And after all, who is the clone? They are very simple ideas. Each time you talk about doppelgangers, about double, you have these ideas. Am I me? And it's so romanesque. And I really wanted to develop that short story into a novel. And that's the novel we have now. Mm-hmm. So the names are also a problem. Who is who? Who is Marie? Who is Viviane? She also has a fugitive name because she's in a group of people resisting, trying to resist the system in this very raw, harsh forest. And it's also a book about what's happening to our little planet. It's a very short novel, but very, very... there are many things in it, I think, because as I said, you know what I'm talking about.
Marie, in contrast to the clone, who's a bit of a sleeping beauty figure, the main character herself is a bit monstrous. The narrator has, one eye, one kidney. She finds her body a bit repellent, doesn't she?
Yes, she's falling apart. She's broken, and her half, her clone, is resting in a rest house for clones. You understand quite quickly what is it about, and all the halves are absolutely intact, sleeping like in they have like in sort of milk, and everything is so quiet, and the nurses are so are floating. You don't know if they are rolling on little wheels or if they are human, and it looks so peaceful. And the human beings are destroyed by the system. They are working too hard. In her past life, she was a psychotherapist, but in even the sessions were recorded, controlled by robots, you could never speak freely. So everything really attacks your mind and your body, while your clone seems to be so peaceful. And yes, there is a love and hate relation there. And the army of fugitives wants to wake up the clones. But the problem is that when you wake up somebody who has slept for such a long time, he's not, what does she or he wants to do? They want to make love, have fun, eat, drink, and they don't want to do the revolutions. They are not political creatures. And it's a big disappointment for the fugitives to have to deal with this sort of little children, adults, you know, who really don't want to fight.
So in a sense, they're not really making a utopia, are they?
It's a utopia that goes, c'est raté, as we say in French. It doesn't work at all. and I hope it's funny also.
Yes, it goes downhill very quickly. And in fact, yes, it seems to replicate some of the power differentials in the society that they've just
absolutely
escaped, mm-hmm, which I guess is why utopia doesn't exist in the world, because we can never seem to make it work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also, the animals play a great part. They are always animals in my books. Mm. I like our difficult times because women and animals at last are taking a little bit more power. And I think we take animals more seriously, much more seriously than before. And all the philosophies and essays and thinking we have about animals at the moment makes me happy. And I wanted animals in this novel to play a direct role, like heroes. Mm-hmm. And the dog and the pigeon, who are very mere, simple animals, what's left of nature in Blade Runner, for example, in this very difficult city. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that they are really important, just that, important.
The zoos in this world have succeeded in bringing back,
yes,
extinct animals, what's sort of known as de-extinction. So
yes,
there's a Tasmanian tiger that's pacing backwards and forwards like we all know it did,
yes,
that last Tasmanian tiger in the zoo, and we've got those images blazed into our memories.
In many of my novels, like, for example, Tom is Dead, a novel I wrote 10 years ago, there is a tiger of Tasmania, because I think, well, you of course you're Australian, so it really goes to your heart, but outside Australia, on the planet, this tiger is like a ghost of all, a representative of all that's gone, mm-hmm, of all that's disappeared. Not only animals, but The mere idea of disappearance is in this tiger, who is not a tiger. And I really think he's a wonderful, alas, fiction character. I want them alive in my books.
That's one way to bring them back, isn't it, to write about
yes.
them? Mm-hmm. And there's this wonderful line, "In the forest I've come to understand that zoos are museums of extinction." Is that how you feel about zoos presently?
Alas, yes, yes. And even sometimes our gardens are zoos of extinction. We try to keep them alive. We try to keep some peculiar plants alive. Actually, we are all very worried. We are all very worried for our children and grandchildren. It is going to be very fast, perhaps, the global extinction. But I think fiction is really a way of not exactly to fight it directly, but to think together, to bring us together to think. And not fiction in cinema, in literature, in songs also. And I keep hope for that.
This is The Hub on Books. I'm Sarah Lestrange, speaking to French author Marie Dariussecq. We're speaking about her fascinating novel, Our Life in the Forest. As we mentioned, Marie, the main character was a psychologist when she lived in the city. And she says she became a psychologist because she went to so many as a young woman. And she talks a lot about patient zero, who's a clicker. Can you just explain this idea?
A clicker is a job that already exists. It's a sort of lumpen proletariat. How do you say that?
Very like someone who works in a call centre, someone who's doing very base work.
Yes, it's the base work of computers and mega data. They actually exist, for example, in India.
Not to diss people who work in call centres, of course.
Yes, but they work at home in general with their computer and they click. What do? They teach, in a way, robots, artificial intelligence, associations, human associations. Because if you don't explain a robot that blue is not only the color of the sky, it's also the color of a moody spirit. It's also a music. It's also the color of your skin when it's bumped, when you have a... So if you don't explain a robot all these associations, the robot will never know. So you have to click to associate, for example, red with blood, but also with love. And there are many, many people actually on the planet at the moment clicking to feed, in a way, artificial intelligence. I'm fascinated by this work because it's like trying to teach a robot poetry.
Yeah.
Poetry. And for the moment, if we speak in poetry, if we put many metaphors and images in our talk, in our language, robots will not understand. The same way, apparently, for the moment, they cannot understand double negation. If I'm telling you, for example, "You must not forget that I am not a non-person," it's already difficult for you as a human
negative,
being.
Yes.
Yes. But for the moment, robots are blocked. They are stuck. So it's funny, this cliche, this saying that I heard when I was a kid at school, "Poetry will save the world." I thought it was just an image, but it's perhaps true, in fact. We will keep speaking freely with poetry.
So you're saying that metaphors will jam the system?
Yes, exactly. They will jam the system.
That's a wonderful idea, because it did make me think, well, could these robots one day write a novel based on these associations?
Something will be missing. Perhaps the novels will be perfect, but they will be bad.
And anyway, there's so many people wanting to write novels. I don't think we need the robots to do it.
Yes, it's true.
Marie, authors often get a bit tetchy if you point out the fact that the main character has the same name as the author. But I'm going to ask about it anyway. Your main character has the same name as your name. So what's going on there?
Well, as I was talking about clones, I accepted the idea that she was a little bit my alter ego. She was me. I often write thinking that all my narrators, who are often women, are me if I was not a writer. Me in a different life, but me without my books. And she writes.
Yeah, she does.
She dares writing. So, and I like her very much. So why not Marie? It was simple this way. And also, she remembers the world where I lived. If this book is set, let's say, I don't know, in 10 or 20 years, she remembers a world that I knew, and I feel close to her. And she's very brave. She's naive, and she was not lucky like me to have an education, but she's very brave.
So you're nostalgic for the future that she represents too.
In a way, yes. And I played a lot with our culture, our really global popular culture, when, for example, she has to explain who is the Mona Lisa or what is the Chapelle Sixtine or very, very basic cultural facts that she has to explain, because in her world, well, the memory has gone. And I thought it was both very scary and also very funny, because, well, you know, who am I to explain to you who is Mona Lisa and what the painting is, you know? I also hope this book is a little bit of circus, you know. I'm doing like an acrobat.
And is that how you feel when you're writing, that you're playing, or is it a bit harder than that?
Oh, it's much more. It's harder than that, of course. It's when at the end of the day I have like 10 sentences or half a page, I'm happy, and I know I will have to read it again and write it again. So of course it's hard, but it's a work of patience and of obstination. And also I am brave like her, but not at all in the same forest. My forest is, you know, my little office, and I'm very privileged, and I don't suffer physically and not hungry, etc. I'm not living under bombs, etc. But my mind is full of that. And I think my duty and my joy is to write well, so for the voices who cannot speak, you know, that the basis of literature. And I try to be able to do it as good as I can.
Well, Marie Dariusek, it's been a fascinating discussion, and that goes with a fascinating book. Thanks very much for speaking with me.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Our Life in the Forest is published by Text and translated into English by Penny Houston. This is The Hub on Books. You're with me, Sarah Lestrange.